I've titled this, What is a Good Jew? Which is what we're going to be talking about. That is the content of these 3 weeks, but What is a Good Jew seemed a pretty abstract title. It's not misleading in any way, but it seems just so undefined, so I made sure to give it kind of a double subtitle, which is The Thought of Rav Aharon Lichtenstein and its relevance to Elul. Because what we're going to be doing is anchoring, I'm going to be anchoring everything I am saying over the next 3 weeks in one of the books that I believe to be one of the most important books for every Jew to read. You will have noticed at this point, I like recommending books because I like reading. And generally speaking, we should celebrate the writers of books and books that have been produced because, you know, we live in a world where everything has to be reduced to 140 characters, and apparently that can sum up entire arguments. No, we should celebrate people who actually take the time to write significant numbers of words to try and convey a deeper argument. And this book is called By His Light. This version is actually the not nice version. Nowadays, Koren make a beautiful version of this book. And the interesting thing is, it's not actually written by Rav Lichtenstein. If you've ever tried to read Rav Lichtenstein, you will learn very quickly he is very hard to read because he is too good a writer. It's one of those strange things where his command of the English language is better than most people's. And the way he writes, his turns of phrase, his random quotes of Milton and Shakespeare that he just expects you to be fluent in, it's very difficult. This book is actually essentially an adapted transcript of a series of classes he gave, I want to say in the 80s, to overseas students in his yeshiva, which was basically, what does it mean to be a good Jew? That was essentially what he was attempting to answer. And so we're going to be reading some kind of quotes from the book as well as looking at a lot of sources. But I think this is such an important book. I believe it's one of those books you read and just the very nature of having read it makes you a better person, like such as its impact upon, it's been a transformative book for me. It's a book I try to read, you know, with some regularity. I've read it a few times. It's not explicitly a book on Teshuvah, even though he does have an essay in there on Teshuvah, but the fact that it's not marketed as a book on, you know, repentance does not mean it's not a perfect book about repentance. And in a sense, this three-part series that we're going to be doing is kind of like a three-part Shabbat Shuva drasha in essence. Usually we'd have a Shabbat Shuva, and this year we will have a Shabbat Shuva drasha, which is, you know, maybe 45 minutes to an hour, the goal of which just before Yom Kippur is to kind of urge people into that final repentance mindset, which is very important. But the truth is, we kind of need to start our teshuva process earlier. And there are some topics which take more time to explore than just, you know, 45 minutes to an hour. So in a sense, these three parts are all dedicated to, you know, charging, you know, inspiring people to maybe attempt a more significant act of teshuva than in previous years. And I've written them in part to inspire my own teshuva. That is generally how I do things. I wanted to kind of reread Rav Lichtenstein really with this light in mind, and that's kind of been the source of these shiurim. And a really important distinction that I already want to make, and it happens to be a distinction Rav Lichtenstein himself makes, is that there are two different forms of teshuva. There is teshuva from something, and there is also teshuva to something. Generally, when we think about Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we focus on teshuva from. This past year, we committed sin X, sin Y, sin Z. We failed in all of these various ways, and we want to move away from that. We no longer want to be defined by that. That's teshuva from something. In contrast, teshuva to something is more aspirational. It's not simply we are trying to run away from our sins, but instead it's we are trying to be better versions of ourselves. We are trying to be better people. We are trying to improve ourselves. It's not focused so much on the sins of the past year as the aspirations for the coming year. And this series is all about forget this past year. Forget how many times you failed. What should we aim to be in this coming year. And just before I share the source sheet so we can all look, the simple question we're asking it is, what is a good Jew? And obviously, there are parts of that we think are obvious. We know Jews daven. We know Jews learn Torah. We know Jews do chesed. We know Jews do all of these things. I'm focused more on what is the mentality of a Jew. What is the mentality of a good Jew? What should be in our minds? What should be in our heads? How should we approach the world as Jews, especially in light of the coming Yamim Noraim, as we try to be better? And so I want to share the source sheet at this point, which for those of you who you may remember, it's going to take a couple of moments while I share the source sheet and then panic that Zoom has changed. So just takes a couple of seconds to set everything back up again. Hopefully, everyone is now seeing the source sheet. Those of you who are on, okay, good, thank you. Thank you, Andy, who knows the important role he plays as being on camera and thus providing feedback that indeed I am being, what I'm saying is being heard and the things I'm putting on the screen are being seen. And I want to begin with source number one, which is the beginning of By His Light. And what we are about to read, I think, is one of the most incredible and one of the most important statements ever said by a rabbinic leader, which Rav Lichtenstein was, and he says the following. When seeking to shape our personalities according to Torah values, we must relate to at least three levels of expectation and responsibility. These can be regarded as concentric circles, moving from the broader to the more specific. Number one, the universal demands placed upon one simply as a human being. Number two, the demands of a Jew. And number three, the responsibilities of a Ben Torah, one who makes Torah study a central part of his life and embodies its values. What's so powerful about this is Rav Lichtenstein is starting his book, what is essentially a good religious Jew? First, a good human being. And it's important to recognize this was a major part of Rav Lichtenstein's philosophy. He self-described as what's known as a religious humanist. I mean, even though he has a whole like bajillion page article, which is an absolute nightmare to try and read, explaining what that means, essentially it begins by realizing that being religious does not exclude one from part of humanity. And first and foremost, if we're going to even begin to think about what it means to be a good Jew, we have to first realize, what does it mean to be a human being? What are the responsibilities expected of us simply by being human? And that's what we're going to do. You'll notice there are three things in this list, and there are 3 weeks to this share series. So what we're actually going to talk about tonight is solely focused on the first one. What is our responsibility as human beings? Obviously, this is not to say, if you're a good human being, you're a good Jew. No, it's the first level, but it's the most important level. You cannot be a good Jew if you're a bad person. And so what we're going to explore first and foremost is, what does it mean to be a good person? Next week, we will talk about, well, what does it mean to be a Jew uniquely? And then Rav Lichtenstein in number three was addressing, you know, students in his yeshiva, where the term Ben Torah, someone who, you know, is devoted to Torah learning, you know, to a tremendous degree, we're going to kind of replace that slightly with a slightly different question, which is, if number two is, what does it mean to be a Jew? What are the expectations upon a member of the Jewish people? Number three is, what are the expectations on us who want to consider ourselves particularly religious Jews? Because unfortunately, and I'm not going to go too hard about this tonight, but unfortunately, I think in our community, we think a religious Jew is someone who keeps Shabbat and keeps kashrut, and I don't want to dismiss those who keeping Shabbat and keeping kashrut is very important, but it is not the sole entire definition of what makes someone a religious Jew. That is fulfilling two of the basic expectations of Jews. And so between next week and the week after, we're going to have to really try and drill down and understand what is the mentality, what is the difference between someone who is a Jew versus someone who is striving for a certain level of elite spiritual, you know, an elite spiritual life. The very first source that I want to take a look at is the basically the beginning of the Torah, Rav Lichtenstein attaches tremendous significance to the creation of, or the placement of Adam, of man, in Gan Eden, in the Garden of Eden. And we read in source number 2, Vayikach Adonai Elohim et ha'Adam, Vayinachehu v'Gan Eden. God places man in Gan Eden, la'ovda u'leshamra. Now that literally means to till and to tend it, to work the land. Though as we are going to see, these words are going to gain far more significance in the thought of Rav Lichtenstein. Vayitzav Adonai Elohim, God commanded al ha'Adam, man, limor, saying, mikol eitz hagan achol tochel, you can eat any tree of the garden, ume eitz hadat tovara lo tachum imenu, ki biyom achlecha imenu matomot, but don't eat anything else, because then you'll die, from if you eat from the tree of good and bad. The most important thing for us is the first verse of this source and the beginning of the second. And I first want to start with the beginning of the second verse in source number 2. From here, one of the most important areas of halacha is learned, and what is known as the Shiva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, the Noachide laws. So if you take a look at source number 3, it's the Gemara in Sanhedrin, and it says the following, Minahani Mili, where are the 7 Noachide laws derived? Amar Rabbi Yochanan says, Da Amar Kra, the Torah states, Vaitzav Adonai Elohim al ha'adam limor, mikol eitz hagan achal tochel. God commanded man, saying, of every tree of the garden you are free to eat. Vaitzav, God commanded, Elu hadinin, this is law courts. Hashem zo birkat Hashem, this is the prohibition of blasphemy. Elokim zo avodat kochavim, this is the prohibition of idolatry. Al ha'adam zo shvichut damim, from the word upon man, we learn the prohibition of murder. Leimor, saying, zo giloy arayot, this is immorality. Mikol eitz hagan, of every tree of the garden, v'lo gezel, don't steal. Achol tochel v'lo eva min achai, but not the limb from any living animal. And then ki ata Rabbi Yitzchak, when Rabbi Yitzchak arrived. So just a point to note, whenever you read in the Gemara, it's usually Rabbi Yitzchak and a couple of others. When they arrive from the land of Israel, it means they are now presenting the authoritative version of a tradition. Ki ata Rabbi Yitzchak tani ifcha, he reversed it slightly. Vaitzav zo avodat kolchavim, elokim zo dinim, idolatry and the obligation to establish law courts are learned from slightly different sources. A few things to unpack here. First, and we've spoken about this before, are Chazal truly learning the 7 obligations upon every single human being, regardless of whether they are Jewish or not? These are the 7 Noahide laws. Are they really learning it from this verse? Or were these 7 laws already known to be through tradition, and they are hanging the laws upon a part of the verse? It's always important to bear in mind. The second thing is that the true beauty of this source, I kind of got rid of with, you'll see all of these ellipses, and that's because I didn't want the entire source to take 10 minutes to go through. But after each statement, they argue why this is, and it's classic Chazal being genius of noting verses and parallels. So for example, Vaitzav, why is the fact that God commanded, why the word Vaitzav teaches us the obligation to establish law courts? So in later in Sefer Bereshit, God will mention that he knows Avraham will command Vaitzav to teach his children to observe justice. So Chazal connect the two. Regardless, the important point for us is that there are 7 Noahide laws expected of every human being. The observance of these 7 is forbidden to all, not just Jews. Everyone must abide by them. I would argue, hopefully, we already know when it comes to our expectations of humans, like we shouldn't murder, we shouldn't steal. If those are things that as we approach to Elul are still kind of growing edges for you, address those things first. But I am going to assume that for most of us, I'm going to assume for everyone listening, that we look at this list and we look at it, we're like, okay, we don't really violate any of these things. But it is important to look at one in particular, and which is the obligation to establish law courts. Much has been written exactly what that means, what does it exactly imply, and there's lots of different interpretations. on its simplest level, it's about creating a legal system that has no bias, and which is obviously very important. You can't have different people being treated differently under the eyes of the law. That's a huge problem. But it also underscores what a lot of these seven laws emphasize, which is a certain element of ethical sensitivity. A society cannot function without basic respect between its fellow human beings. And if you look at six of these seven, fine, exclude blasphemy, but a lot of these revolve around the basic human decency we are expected to show to others, regardless of their religion, regardless of who they are. And it extends, Eivar Min HaChai, the prohibition of tearing a limb from a living animal, obviously extends to a certain level of sensitivity towards other creatures too. And so the foundation of any good Jew is ethical sensitivity. Now, that will look different to different people. There is not a one-size-fits-all approach as to what ethical sensitivity is, but, and this is kind of going to be a repeating refrain of what I'm going to be saying for a lot over the next few minutes, but the base level of ethical sensitivity is demanded of every human being. And so if we want to be good Jews, first we have to be good human beings. We have to make sure we have ethical sensitivity. We can never be callous towards those who are suffering. We can never just dismiss them because it's convenient for one reason or another, because we don't care, that a Jew cannot be a good Jew if they lack basic ethical sensitivity. But it goes without saying, or should go without saying, that there is more to even expected of human beings than simply the Shiva Mitzvot Bnei Noach. What are other aspects of being human which are going to be the foundation, the bedrock of being a good Jew? And this is where Rav Lichtenstein attaches tremendous significance to, as we saw in source number two, that Adam is placed in Gan Eden, La'ovda u'lishomra. Literally, as I said, this means to till and to tend it. But le'ovda means to work, and le'shamra means to protect, to guard. And this is something that Rav Lichtenstein emphasizes quite strongly. And again, before we're going to look at actually another source soon, but first, something Rav Lichtenstein points out. And again, he said this in the 80s. To American and overseas students in Israel, but we have to remember that ecological sensitivity, caring for the world, is something a human has to do. The sole responsibility given to Adam is to protect the world he's placed into. This does not mean everyone needs to stop eating meat and, you know, solely travel via boat, a rowing boat. But what it does mean is everyone needs to accept a certain responsibility to this world. Everyone needs to be careful about the way they treat this world. We can't just treat it like our plaything. God did not give us this world in order to do what we want with it. He gave it to us to protect it, to secure it. And so it's very important we remember this. And this is something Rav Lichtenstein does emphasize. He does hit upon. Again, it's going to look different for different people. But, and look, let's be honest. If your main focus in the run-up to Rosh Hashanah is you don't recycle enough, that shouldn't be your focus. If that's your focus, maybe you've gone wrong. But it is to say that, you know, you shouldn't willy-nilly, you know, just like throw plastic bottles from your car on the highway. That's bad. That is a violation of the basic human command of taking care of the world. However, Rav Lichtenstein also points out that this idea of shmira, of protecting the world, has a more powerful and expansive connotation. Because after all, if we think about what these verses are describing in source number two, there was nothing to protect the world from. There were no threats in Gan Eden. We imagine it as this idyllic world. There were no threats. There were no challenges. What needed to be protected? So Rav Lichtenstein points to a statement of Rambam in his Hilchot Beit HaBechira, his Laws of the Beit HaMikdash in source number four. Rambam writes the following. Shmirat HaMikdash Mitzvat Aseh. There's a biblical command to guard the sanctuary. V'af al pi she'ein sham pachad me'oivim velo milistim. Even if there is no fear whatsoever of bandits, of enemies, whatever else. She'ein shmirato ela kavodla. The reason you guard something is to show it honor. Eino dome palterin she'ish alav shomrin. There is no, you cannot compare a palace that has guards outside it, lefalterin she'ein alav shomrin, to one that doesn't. And if you think about, you know, take Buckingham Palace. The guards out there are there for show and for show alone. The White House, the Secret Service are predominantly there for show and show alone. The Vatican, like all these guards are generally there, not because we're actually worried something's going to happen, but because if you walk into a place or you meet a person flanked by bodyguards, it automatically conveys a level of importance, a significance to the person, to the building, to the place. The whole idea of Shmirah need not be protecting it from active threats, but the point of Shmirah is to give it an honor guard, is to show respect, is to convey a certain level of respect towards something. And as Rav Lichtenstein himself writes in source number 5, you guard something which you value and appreciate. You hover over it constantly. While, of course, the Mikdash is Palterin Shel Melech, the palace of the king in a very special sense, the world as a whole is also Palterin Shel Melech, is also the palace of God. And he quotes a verse from Sefer Yeshayahu that the heaven is my throne, the earth is my footstool. In this sense, we must all cultivate a concern for and a sensitivity to the natural order as a whole, to that Garden of Eden to which we have been placed. This is part of Kavod Shemaim, Yirat Shemaim, and Malchut Shemaim, the honor, fear, and sovereignty of heaven. In fact, our responsibility with respect to the orders of creation, natural, human, social, and personal, is now heightened, since subsequent to Adam's sin, there are indeed real dangers which threaten them. As human beings, we have a responsibility to show a level of respect, to take care of the world in which we are placed. Human beings have to participate in society. They have to help work towards making a society better for those who live within it. Again, there are competing visions for what that looks like, but whatever the vision you subscribe to, you have to actively participate in it in some sense. We have to take care of the world in which we are placed. A good Jew is a good human being, and a good human being participates in society. That being said, as important as Shmirah is, again, I don't imagine it's a major vector of tshuva. Halavai, we're all sat, you know, on Yom Kippur, clapping our al-chaitz, and the only thing we have to confess is that we didn't, you know, participate in do enough civic duty. You know, we didn't canvass for someone. Realistically, I don't think it's a major vector of teshuva. Again, if you throw your bottles on the highway or you intentionally burn fuel for fun in a trash can in your backyard, yes, please redress that. That is bad. That is a violation of shmirat, you know, our place of needing to show shmirat to the world. But practically speaking, this is not a major aspect of our teshuva, but it's still important for us to know. What is far more relevant to all of us is the other obligation placed upon humanity in Gan Eden, le'ovda, to work the land. And it's important to realize the original land of Gan Eden ostensibly didn't need work. It was this kind of magical, miraculous place. Adam HaRishon is punished with having to kind of toil on the land. We can assume Gan Eden didn't really require a tremendous amount of work. But nonetheless, the goal of every human is to be placed into this world in order to la'avod, in order to work. And there is probably no better statement of this than one of the most wonderful midrashim. If you've already familiar with this midrash, it's one of those you can hear over and over again, and it's still great. And if you've not, prepare to have your mind blown. It's pretty long, but I didn't want to take out any of it because it's just such a good and important quote to read in full. And so we read the following in source number 6. Ma'asesh sha'al turnus Rufus Harasha. So one of the Roman generals at the time, et Rebbe Akiva, he turned to Rebbe Akiva with a question. Ezo ma'asim na'im shel hakadosh baruch hu or shel basar vadam? Whose works are more beautiful, the works of God or those of humans? Amar lo, Rebbe Akiva responds, shel basar vadam na'im. The product of humans is far greater than the product of God, which you already have to imagine is like, wait, what did you just say, Rabbi Akiva? Amar lo turnus Rufus. He turns to him and says, Hare hashamayim v'haaretz yachol adam la'asot kayotzi behem. You're telling me humans can do a better job than God? Did humans create the heaven and earth? Amar lo Rabbi Akiva, lo tomar liba davash hu lamala min habriyot she'in sholten alav. Don't compare human efforts to godly efforts in ways humans could not even attempt to do. Ela emor dvarim shehim mitsuyin bivnei adam. Rather, speak about things that are relevant to humans too. Amar lo, Tinus Rufus responds and says, lama atem, and I highlighted just so everyone can like follow along, lama atem mulin, why do you circumcise? Amar lo, Rabbi Akiva responds, ani hayiti yodeh she'al davaza tasholeni olakach ikdamdi v'amarti lecha. I knew you were going to ask me this one because the Romans hated circumcision, and obviously that's a big part of being Jewish. Shema'aseh b'nei adam na'im mishal hakadosh baruch hu. When I wanted to say to you that I knew you were going to ask this question when I said that works of humans are better than the works of God. Because if you think about it, a child is born uncircumcised and it is humans who circumcise the child, who complete the, you know, spiritual perfection of a human being that God himself has not done. And therefore, to illustrate, he says the following. Hevila, Rabbi Akiva, shebolim uklaskot. They brought him wheat and bread. Amarlo, elu ma'aseh HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ve'elu ma'aseh Yirei Adam. One of these God created and one of these humans made. The wheat was made by God, the bread was made by humans. Amarlo, ein elu na'im yoter min hashibolim. Isn't the bread better than the wheat? Isn't that what you'd rather eat? Amarlo turnus Rufus, im hu chafetz bamila. I'm going to get a bit carried away with the source. His point is, again, to emphasize humans have a better contribution to this world than God. God only makes wheat. Humans make bread. Amar lo turnus Rufus, im hu chafetz bamila, lama eno yotze havlad mohol mimei imo. If God wants us to circumcise so badly, why doesn't he create human beings automatically circumcised? Amar lo Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva thus responds, v'lama shoro yotze imo. So you could ask the same thing about, like, why does a baby come out with an umbilical cord? Like, it should just automatically sever from the child as it comes out. It's a rhetorical device rather than an anatomical argument, we should note. So why don't boys come out circumcised? Because God only gave the Jewish people commandments in order to refine them, in order to participate in his actions in this world. And this is a very powerful aspect of Rabbi Akiva's, you know, viewpoint. The goal of and again, he's speaking specifically of Jews, but again, we can take this, as Rav Lichtenstein does, more broadly. God has given us a world that it is upon humans to perfect. It is upon humans to work towards making better. God gives wheat, but we can't eat wheat. God gives a whole variety of things, but in their natural state, they are pretty useless. Or if not complete, you know, we have to do things with them. La of da, the idea of work, the value of work, is in part that responsibility to improve the world, to actively participate in society and to be, practically speaking, doing things that work to, and it's such a cliche that work to make the world a better place, but it is true. Like, we had to, you know, there are some doctors on the call. It's always an easy illustration of doctors. Someone comes in sick, you make them better, boom. You have contributed to the improvement of the world in that way, but it is true in so many different ventures that we engage in, that generally what we are doing as humans. The point of work is to perfect the world in some way. And this really, again, goes back to the belief of Rav Lichtenstein in religious humanism, that our role as people must be to contribute to society and to contribute to the world. But there is something more about this concept of avodah, because, as I mentioned earlier, there wasn't really a need to work the land of Gan Eden. We assume it miraculously all kind of produced itself as is. And yet, nonetheless, what the Torah seems to be declaring by nonetheless God commanding Adam to work the land is that there is some innate human value to work in and of itself. And this is seen fascinatingly in a midrashic understanding of a central verse in the Torah. So the fourth commandment to keep Shabbat in Parashat Yitro says the following, source number 7. Zachor ad yom ha-shabbat l'kadsha, remember Shabbat day and keep it holy. Sheish ad yamim ta'avod, 6 days shall you work. V'yasita kol melachtecha, 7th day. 6 days shall you work and shall you do all of your work. V'yom ha-shvi shabbat l'adonai elohecha, but the 7th day is a Shabbat to God. V'lo ta'aseh chol melacha, ata uvincha uvitecha, avdecha v'amadcha v'hemdecha v'garecha asher b'shvecha, no one can do any work. You will also notice, this is a complete aside, the number of cantillation marks in these verses is absolutely crazy, because as is maybe well known, the Aseret HaDibrot there is a special tune for them. So I copied this from Sfaria. So again, if you're actually learning Torah reading, or even you look at an art scroll, Chumash, they print both versions separately. So if you are kind of, there is the traditional way the verses would be read, but then we have the special way they need to be sung when, you know, when you're hearing them. So there you go. But just even as I was reading this, I was struck by just the number of cantillation marks, and it was bothering me. So I just went, in case it was bothering anyone else, that's why. Take a look at source number 8. On the verse, Sheshet Yamim Ta'avod, 6 days shall you work. Rebbe, which means Rebbe Shimon Bar Yochai, because this is his midrashim, which we spoke about way back when we talked about these kinds of things. Hare Zug Zera Acheret. This verse is actually teaching us a new law, an additional law. We don't need to be told to keep Shabbat from the words, 6 days shall you work. Shekeshem Shenitztavu Yisrael Al Mitzvat Aseh Shal Shabbat. Just as the Jewish people are commanded to observe the positive command of Shabbat, kach nitztavu al hamalacha, so are they commanded to work 6 days a week. There is, and again, this is a quintessentially Jewish source, but it nonetheless has broader relevance of the importance of work. Sheshet yamim ta'avod, and I believe there are some, definitely, you know, famously Israel, Sunday is a work day, but it often gives off Friday. But there are particularly religious institutions that don't. They only give off Shabbat because Sheshet Yamim Ta'avod, you have to work 6 days a week. So deep down, thank God we have more than one weekend day. But at least, you know, this source points to, there is a significance to the notion of work. But it doesn't just mean our jobs. It doesn't mean simply that we need to work at our jobs. Avodah has a far broader connotation than that. And the best example of this is seen in sources 9 and 10, which, by the way, are about to ruin some people are about to have their evenings ruined, but here you go. Source 9, Gemara in Sanhedrin. Mischak Bekuvia. So the Mishnah teaches us that a professional gambler is not allowed to be a witness. They cannot serve as an aid. There's a whole list of people who can't serve as witnesses, and not all people who are disqualified from witnesses have some sort of innate failure. It's very important to recognize. But in this particular case, it is very explicit. There is some innate failure to a professional gambler. Yes.
You said a professional gambler. The translation says dice player. Is there a distinction?
What we would call a professional gambler now, they didn't play poker back in the days of Chazal. They played dice. But it is not, this is not one of those areas. It is very obvious. This is not literally dice. That's the point. It is generally speaking, someone, and we're going to see this and I'm going to explain this. It is someone who earns money on chance.
Okay, I'll stand by. Thank you. Yeah.
So, Micah Ovid, the Gemara asks, what have they done? Why is this person not allowed to be a witness? Amar Rami Bar Chama. Rami Bar Chama gives one answer. Mishum dahave asmachta viasmachta lokanya, because they are doing an asmachta and that takes no effect. This is an incredibly technical notion that I'm going to try to explain very briefly, but it's the following. Imagine you are gambling with someone else. The nature of gambling, the principle of asmachta argues, you don't actually ever plan to lose money. You assume you're going to win the money. And then the person opposite you wins $100 from you. And what Rami Barchani is essentially saying, and again, I'm trying to uber simplify this, but this is not actually hyper relevant to what I'm trying to say, but I just want to explain it anyway. What Rami Barchani is basically saying is, you never really mentally relinquished that $100. You thought it was going to be yours. So the person taking it from you, asmachta lo kanya, you can't take effect. You're basically, you're stealing from each other. Because if you never willfully gave over the money, it doesn't count. And that's that. Rami Barchani says the reason a professional gambler cannot be a witness is essentially because they're a thief. However, Rav Sheshet says something very different. Rav Sheshet Amar, Kol ki hai gavna lav asmachtahi. No. Asmachta does not apply here. Ela lefisha ein asukin bi yeshuvo shel olam. Because they are not involved in the constructive development of the world. And as Rambam says, source number 10, v'hamasachek bekuvia, im ha'akom, one who plays dice, he adds with Gentiles, fine, ein bo isu gezel, you're not actually going to violate theft for technical reasons, aval yesh bo isu osek b'dvarim betelim. But nonetheless, it's still prohibited because there's another prohibition. You're wasting your time. She'ein ra'oi la'adam. It is not appropriate for any human being. She'ya'asok kol yamav, to spend all their days. Ela bedivrei chochma uv'yishuvo shel olam. But with, you know, worlds of wisdom and pursuits that lead to the, you know, the productive future of humanity. Yishuvo shel olam is a major tenet of thought here. We see it in Rambam. Rav Lichtenstein attaches tremendous significance to it. In other words, the disqualification of a professional gambler is a moral one. It's not theft. It's that the person is not contributing to a better world. And it's really interesting because when you actually read Rambam's Hilchot, the other place the professional dice player appears, the gambler appears, is Rambam's Hilchot Teshuvah, his laws of repentance. Because Rambam's classic example of the penitent, when Rambam looks for the perfect example of someone who has done teshuvah, he talks about someone who's thrown away their cards, their dice, whatever. And Chazal indeed say, it's very important to recognize, Chazal indeed say that, you know, someone can be a witness if they've given up their life as a professional gambler. We consider them, you know, it. And again, because it's a yeshuvo shel olam. If this person was not contributing to the betterment of society, and then they cease, and now they are contributing to the betterment of society, they are allowed to once again be a witness. What's very, very important from this source is the idea that is so alien to Western society. Work is not about making money. A good human a person worthy of respect is not someone with money. You can acquire money in a whole variety of ways. A professional poker player makes a lot of money if they're good. There are a lot of ways you can make money, but that is not what makes you a good human being. What makes you a good human being is being committed to Yishuvo Shel Olam, is contributing to the world at large. And there's a really amazing source. It's a midrash from the story of Avraham. How did Avraham know he'd found the land of Israel? So this midrash offers an absolutely incredible answer. Amar Rabbi Levi, B'sha'a shahaya Avraham mehalech ba'aram naharaim uva'aram nachol. Avraham arrives at his first destination. Ra'a otan ochlin v'shotin u'pochazin. He sees the people eating, drinking, and acting loosely, is the English translation. Amar halavai lo yeheli chelek ba'eretz hazot. Please don't make these people be the people I'm about to inherit the land of. V'kevan shehegia l'sulmash al tzor, he arrives at the cliffs of Kaya. Ra otan asukin benikush bishat hanikush. He sees the people work, they're weeding. It's weeding time. Be'idor bishat ha'idor, he sees them, you know, hoeing during the time of hoeing. The people are working the land. Amar halavai yehechelke be'eretz hazot. Let this be the land I inherit. Amar lo hakadosh baruch hu lezarachai denazot. And that's when God said, this is the land, this is your land. In other words, and again, this goes also to what it means to be a Jew, but to be a human, it is to value the act of work in and of itself, to recognize the redemptive quality and to recognize the value of doing productive things. It's really important to recognize this does not just mean our jobs, whatever our jobs may be. Some jobs, again, more easily translate into Yishuvo Shel Olam than others. But what it essentially means is that, at least for some of the free time that is given to us, we have to ask ourselves, am I contributing to Yishuvo Shel Olam or not? You know, at this point, I am not the person who's telling you, tear away your TVs, throw them away, never watch it again. I spoke about this. I gave that drasha, by the way, a couple of weeks ago about TVs as I was also writing this. So like that was, I actually look in my notes, there's a tremendous amount of overlap. So I'm not going to repeat what I said, but it was just on my mind at the time a lot. But again, Yishuvo Shel Olam is something really important that needs to be. It needs to be something that we are committed to Yishuvo Shel Olam. So someone did ask a question privately, you know, where does it end in terms of, you know, people, everyone is working to earn money. So where is, you know, where does it end? So, you know, so the two examples, the contrast is someone who kind of produces books for a living. You are allowed to, you should earn a living from what you do. If you produce books, quite frankly, I could not think of anything more Yishuvo Shel Olam, assuming you're producing kind of like, you know, solid nonfiction that makes people think, that's bettering society. Yeah, if you're producing rags that just get people angry, like, you know, you walk into a Barnes & Noble these days, there are the books that are designed to make people angry that contain few facts and few well-thought arguments, and then there are the books that are really good. I'm talking about the second part. But yeah, a casino owner, yeah, that would be a problem. His entire industry, and what I will say, is that we mistakenly think it is permissible for Jews to gamble in general, when it is explicitly and obviously the entire antithesis of Yishuvo Shel Olam. Don't want to get into that now. You know, I was recently having a conversation with a couple of people who were asking me, and I'm like, do you really want to ask me this question? I don't think you do. But again, so the question is, again, like, and it's important to note here, and I'm going to stress this now already, we're also talking about, again, aspirational, idealizing, as we think about trying to better ourselves first as humans. You might have a job in the least what might seem like, assuming you're not, again, engaged in the opposite of Yishuvo Shel Olam, or you're engaged in crime, like, you might not recognize how your job helps people. But the truth is, like, We had the other day a guy come and install like a Radon get rid of a. That's Yishuvo Shel Olam. Like, I'm as a hypochondriac, I'm so much happier knowing that the Radon is lesser in my house. Now, whether or not it matters, I don't care. I feel better for it. Yishuvo Shel Olam, the person who works at Starbucks is, you know, that there are so many ways to do Yishuvo Shel Olam. Not everyone needs to be, you know, saving lives every day to contribute. But there are jobs where it is obvious they contribute to society. There are jobs where it's obvious they do not contribute to society. We are talking about the blatantly obvious ones that don't contribute to society. I was also asked another question, which is not the stock market gambling? I do not want to get into the whole halach. I mean, essentially, it's not, because it's different, because you are owning parts of companies and it is an entirely different game. But that is not to say the question is invalid. As in, there is the hypothesis of why would stock marketing be any different? Again, if you are the kind of stockbroker who intentionally like guts companies to make money, yeah, that's bad. But if you're the kind of stock broker who invests in tech to, I don't know, clean the oceans or help people in medical need have cheaper access to medical care, that's Yishuvo Shel Olam. So again, the reason Chazal use gambling is because it's so obviously black and white to them. The second you step away from that, it becomes harder to identify, and we don't need to, you know, we don't need to go around the room, everyone say your job, and we'll kind of boo or cheer depending on whether we think you kind of could. We'll have a giant like meter and we'll kind of like adjust it based on whether or not people truly help. The point is more, what I'm trying to emphasize more is the notion that avodah is a central component of what it means to be human. And therefore, if we want to think about how we're going to be good Jews, we have to first ask ourselves, how can we help further Yishuvo Shel Olam? How can we help further, you know, how can we work more in this religious sense? And there's another source I want to share. And this is where we're going to kind of start, we're winding towards the end already. So the following source number 12, at first glance seems controversial. Please give me time to explain it. So the Mishnah in Ketubot is talking about situations where a husband must divorce his wife. Again, now is not the time to talk about divorce in the ancient world and how it was different to, you know, nowadays. But Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer says something very important. Af hamadir et ishto mila'asot melacha. If a husband vows that his wife should never do any work, yotzi v'yitein ketubata. He must divorce her. Shehabatala mivia. Lidei shi'amum, because this idleness will lead her to, shi'amum is an incredibly difficult word to translate. Ennui is the best, and that's not helpful because it's not English. It's important what this is saying and not saying. This is not talking about a stay-at-home mother who is not having a job. And this is why it's so important to realize what we mean by work here. What it means is, If basically Chazal are saying, if a husband thinks it's really good for his wife to provide her with a live-in maid, a live-in childcare, a live-in this, a live-in that, so that literally all she ever does is sits in a chair chilling, that's going to lead to shi'amum, it's going to lead to ennui, it's going to drive her mad, and that is cruel. The notion here behind Source 12 is that the worst thing possible, that's not true, let me walk that back. A really cruel thing, not the most cruel thing, but a really cruel thing a husband could do would be essentially not give her, she has zero purpose. She has nothing to do. Everything is taken care of. Avodah does not mean, oh, you have to have a 9 till 5. You have to work somewhere. Avodah means having a certain contribution to this world, doing something. That is what avodah is. That is what humans were placed into this world to do. You could be a contractor working, you know, shifts. You could be, again, a doctor saving lives. You could be a bus driver. You could be a whole host of things. But It's more than your job itself. Take a look at source number 13, and then 14 is the final source. Vayomer Moshe el Bnei Yisrael. So this is when the building of the Mishkan. Re'u kara Adonai b'shem Betzalel ben Uri ben Chol Matay Yehuda. Betzalel is the person who was commissioned to design the Mishkan. Vayimalei otar ruach Elohim. He's got a divine spirit. B'chochma u'bitvuna u'vda'at u'v'chol melacha. His skill, ability, craft is going to be awesome. Uvacharoshet even lemalot uvacharoshet etz. All these various types of craft. La'asot b'chol melechet machshevet, to work in, and the literal translation is every kind of designer's craft, creative work, which melechet machshevet gains, halachically speaking, a different connotation. As we see in source number 14, melechet machshevet asra Torah, and the context here is important. What's missing in the Hebrew is b'shabbat on Shabbat. What's really cool, by the way, is you see this is the Gemara in Beitza. The Gemara mentions this phrase around six times, never once in Masechet Shabbat. But the prohibited activity on Shabbat is Melechet Machshevet, which is really a technical category. But what it really means is creative work. The Avodah that we are supposed to be devoted to on the 6 days of the week is Melechet Machshevet, is creative work, is using our skills, our talents in some way towards the furthering of ourselves, the furthering of society. We're using our time productively. And that is the most actionable, I think, aspect for all of us as we approach the Yamim Noran. A good Jew is a good human being. And a good human being uses their time productively. This does not mean that you never again watch people repair shoes on YouTube. This does not mean that you never again do some like random, you know, thing. No. But what it means is, what is our default? When we, for those of us who do have jobs, when we come home, what's our default? Is our default to, and I don't want to speak even about Jewish things. A regular human being returns home from work. In America in the 21st century, they open their phone, they check Twitter, they watch TV, and then they go to bed. That is rejected. That is not what we can allow ourselves to do. We read a book. I don't know, something, we expand our minds more. We volunteer time at a soup kitchen. We do things that contribute to the greater good of society. Not the whole time. You get home from work at 6. You can't, it's not, oh, and until bed, that's, you know, you're going to go to sleep at 10, 4 hours. You must use all of them productively. But essentially, it's about priorities. It's about, where do we devote most of our time? Do we spend an hour watching TV at night to relax before the end of the day? Or do we spend 4 hours watching TV as our default activity? Those two are very different. My favorite example of this that I've been recently thinking about, there is a Manchester United's best player, Bruno Fernandes. He takes a nap every afternoon for like half an hour to an hour. Usually we would think taking a nap for an hour is like the hallmark of the most lazy person in the world. But no. He does it because he spent the whole morning intensively training, and sports science teaches that if you nap, your body will rest better and you will be better. And I think of this example, and I like this example because two people may do the same act, and it is the mentality, it's the motivation behind it that also makes things different. Two people may watch TV for an hour at night. One person is using it to rest and recharge after a hard day. And another person is using it to just waste time and pass the hours. And that is something we need to move away from. I imagine it is something that afflicts me. It's something that I imagine afflicts most. It's a 21st century, 20th century problem. We default to nothingness. We think work is bad, and therefore the opposite is good, which is doing very little and doing only fun things. But no. Productive engagement with things, Yishuvo Shel Olam, is really what we should focus on. And so as we think about, and at this point I'll stop the share, as we think about, you know, what are we focusing on? in the run-up to the Yamim Noran, in the run-up to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So again, this is part one of three. We've got a lot more to talk about, a lot more foci to introduce to our minds. But I would encourage everyone, you know, take some time over the coming days and ask yourself, like, do the nightmarish tracking your time. Watch what you spend your time. By the way, it's really depressing. You can also install apps on your computer which tell you, like, if your phone, Apple phones do this by default. They're like, you spent 15 hours last week, you know, like texting people. Why? It doesn't do the moral part of it, but maybe it should. But it's, we need to ask ourselves, what are we devoting our time to? And are there areas in which we could instead dedicate ourselves to things that are more productive? And I define productive very low level here. Again, if you have the choice between reading a nonfiction book that will expand your mind in some way, I believe in some way that is contributing. That is the avodah of which, you know, Rav Lichtenstein, you know, thinks as someone who he was very much a broad reader. That is very true. You don't have to volunteer at the soup kitchen, but it's about what is your default when you're not working. Don't worry about your actual job. When you're not working, what is your default? What are you doing? And if you look at and observe what you have been doing over the past few weeks, it's really depressing. But it is something we need to start adjusting to. And so in terms of a practical goal for everyone, you know, think about that over the coming week and ways in which you can, again, it's not teshuva from, it's teshuva to. The ideal version of yourself, you now want to move further towards, and the ideal version of yourself does not watch TV for 4 hours a night. So start moving towards the person you wish to be by engaging far more. I want to reemphasize again the importance of Shmirah, but again, I think that's something that we generally speaking, hopefully are attentive to. But far more is this idea of avodah. A human being is expected to contribute towards the greater fulfillment of society, to Yeshuvo Shel Olam, is expected to try and be more productive than they are unproductive with their time. But as we will start to see next week, when it comes to what it means to be a Jew, the expectations and the demands are far greater still. And so we will have to start thinking about how those demands impact our process of teshuvah as we move towards the Yamim Noran. Gambling is considered by Chazal, by Rambam, as a waste of time. Many other things are not a waste of time. So again, and this is where, again, the TV dimension comes in. Forget an analogs to gambling. Sitting in front of the TV for 4 hours straight every evening is a waste of time. No one would deny that. Relaxing for a half an hour in the evening, different. That's not a waste of time. That's relaxing. But like an actual waste of time, if it's a waste of time, it's akin to professional gambling. If it involves in some way or another gaining money, doesn't matter. That's not the issue. The issue is wasting time. The issue is being consumed by, you know, nothingness. That is the major issue that I was trying to draw forward. And that is what we need to be committed to the opposite of, to trying to use our time as purposefully as possible. You know, sure, you're still going to take naps like Bruno Fernandes. You're still going to take your nap. But the reason you're taking your nap is not because you want to waste an hour because the afternoon is too long unless you sleep through half of it. It's because you're trying to recharge. There's a fundamental difference between the two. Any other questions? Andy, are you about to unmute yourself or type? And it was very awkward. I called on you as you like gestured towards the computer.
No, I was not. I was just adjusting our video, but thank you for asking.
All right, awesome. So next week we will continue by asking ourselves, what is a good Jew? And we will once again turn back to the thought of Rav Lichtenstein. I will also add, if you do want to know, all of this is also available online for free, though I would recommend reading the book because it's just an easier read than online. I will speak for myself, but I tend to find reading things online is always less easy than reading a book. But By His Light is all online. So feel free to read. You will notice many of the sources that he quotes were quoted tonight. But yeah, it's an incredibly important book, and I wish everyone a good evening. And please God, I will see, for those of you I don't see this coming Shabbat, I will see you next week. Everyone have a wonderful night.